Oscar Magoxi's Space Odyssey. 1. Toronto man terrified to enter UFO. Back in September 1974, Oscar Magoxi, 1928-2002, a Toronto resident at the time, had his first UFO sighting on a property he owned in Huntsville. Then in July 1975, he returned to Huntsville and saw the same orange glowing object, which landed nearby. Then I stood there motionless, soundless, just like I stood further away, frozen and breathless, he wrote. I was simply terrified to go near it. Finally, Magoxi pulled himself together and overwhelming curiosity took over. After some hesitation, I poked at its hull with my rubberized flashlight, Magoxi admitted. He described the UFO as a gray saucer that was 25 feet in diameter, 10 feet high from top to bottom, plus another 2 feet perhaps for the upper dome with 3 oval-shaped portholes and sitting on 3 ball-like protrusions. He could see no seams or doors on the craft. Then to his surprise, a 3-foot-long horizontal crack appeared and widened into a closed mouth-like slot, and eventually into a man-sized doorway with a ramp extending toward the ground. When no aliens came out of the craft, he summons the nerve to enter it. Inside was a curtain of yellow light, which had created the illusion of a wall. This light illuminated the platform on which he stood. As he moved further into the craft, a blue-green glow sprung up all around me, illuminating most of the interior. When the door closed behind him, he said, sudden panic seized me. It was a wonder I didn't have a heart attack. After inspecting the craft's interior, his intense nervousness led to a sudden feeling of exhaustion. Then all-out panic took over. Maybe I'd better beat it, I thought, before this darn thing takes off with me, or brainwashes me, or disintegrates me, or who knows what. Fear took over the spirit of adventure. In a hurry, I activated the door opener, and it worked. I scrambled down a ramp, retreating to the edge of the clearing like a frightened deer. 2. Magoxi takes UFO ride around the planet. While mulling over his experience the following day, former Toronto resident Oscar Magoxi wondered if his own subconscious had somehow brought the UFO. In his excitement over that thought, he returned to the same site that same night. Calling the saucer. Calling the saucer. Please, come tonight. I am ready and waiting. Magoxi concentrated on that message a few times and before long, he spotted a far away momentary orange blink very high up. Then he realized that he was somehow communicating with the craft telepathically. As before, the craft landed and Magoxi entered it with less fear this time. Rather than go into everything he saw this time, we'll skip ahead a little. After concentrating on the those that he would like a ride in the craft, it sprang to life. Through an infrared portal on the floor that could zoom in on the landscape below, he could see where the craft went. What a magnificent thrill it was to be inside an airborne saucer, he wrote. After flying over metropolitan areas including Toronto and New York City, the saucer zoomed towards Cairo and the pyramids, all tailored to his requested destinations. Once over the Great Pyramid of Giza, the craft seemed to be sucking up a shiny bluish current as if charging up before carrying on. The ensuing trip included stops over the Holy Land where he could see a column of tanks heading in the craft's direction. When the tanks sent missiles into the air, the craft responded by putting up a force field, emitted short bursts of bluish rays and then took off. The next stop was Tibet inside Red China in the Himalayas, where he left the craft at the wish of several monks who gave him protective clothing. He found himself in some underground Tibetan monastery where the monks chanted for hours. After some time I felt floating bodily in the air, while being gently washed inside and throughout by a joyous tingling sensation. Later I even saw an impossible happening, perhaps due to a mild hallucination. The High Lama's body floated up slowly into the air and stayed there without seeming supports. Then it was on to Sima Kupiku, a 15th century Incan site in Peru, then Mount Shasta in the Cascade Range in California and onto the CN Tower in Toronto. Many people have seen UFOs at Makupiku and Mount Shasta. It appears from Google Earth images that there might be a portal in Mount Shasta through which UFOs enter and leave. In December 2013, A man was traveling to the town of Merrill near Manchester when he noticed a pure, bright white dot rectangular light emanating from a pie-shaped object. He also saw from 2 to 4 beings around the object that appeared to be working on the craft. When they turned and stared at him, he drove off but made a U-turn with his large truck and about 3 minutes later returned to find that the craft was gone. However, he soon spotted a UFO with red and white lights in the sky that made no sound. It seemed to be headed for Mount Shasta, about a mile away. He abruptly made another U-turn and headed in that direction. Once he reached a wooded area by the Lava Flows Monument, his truck lost power and slowed almost to a stop for no apparent reason at all. On top of that, he noted, most of my attempts to make calls or texts were stopped short by no signal in the area where the signal has never been a problem for me. When the craft Magoxa was in finally arrived back in Huntsville, the door opened and he knew the trip was over. I was on home soil again, he wrote. It felt good after all those far away places and strange happenings, but also sad that the adventure was over. It was not, however, the end of his space travels. 3. UFO powers up at Pickering, Ontario nuclear plant. In August 1975, Oscar Magoxa would have the experience of a lifetime, one that would take him via a UFO into outer space. Feeling more than ready for such a trip, he returned to Huntsville and attempted to summon them again. Within about 20 minutes, the craft appeared and landed. I felt triumphant, he wrote. I was proven right about the saucers coming, therefore I must have detected it by ESP. When the door opened, he quickly climbed the ramp and went inside. We lifted off and rose vertically. I sat down by the floor porthole, while the saucer kept climbing higher and higher, up to about 20,000 feet. After it flew over Toronto, it traveled to Pickering. When it was over the Pickering nuclear power station, where it appeared to be powering up as it did over the Great Pyramid, then Magoxa saw a 2-foot-high cube appear that contained clothing and other gear. He knew that he must put them on. When he did, he immediately felt mentally and physically more aware. I was convinced that the belt and helmet were made for boosting my mental and physical powers, he noted. Therefore, an interdimensional journey seemed imminent. Being re-energized, the craft then took off into space. Briefly, I felt a tingling sensation from many parts of my body, he wrote. At one point, he could see a spectacular nebula in the distance. But then the craft came back toward Earth and more specifically, the Bermuda Triangle. It went through some kind of portal and then suddenly shot up again into deep space. The saucer must have traveled terribly fast in that ghost realm of the vortex, to have covered such a great distance so soon. Magoxa then saw a huge flying saucer through one of the portals. It was at least 100 feet wide and maybe 40 in height, disc-shaped with a huge dome on its top, with myriads of multicolored lights flickering through its translucent hull. Must be some kind of mothership, I thought. As he watched Earth disappear from view, he realized that the mothership was in a suspended, halfway transit between dimensions. Then to his surprise, the craft he was on entered the huge ship by going through its wall. The craft he was in had dematerialized and then materialized again and landed inside the mothership, a circular hangar. Magoxa stepped out on the ramp and a hidden door slid open in the wall. On the other side of it, yet another door opened and he went inside. He found a room with one wall of slanted glass window to floor to ceiling that felt like plexiglass. The entire construction formed a 15-foot-high pyramid. This would be his quarters for a journey to another planet in an alternate dimension. As he peered outside, he saw magnificent mysterious deep space with Earth and the stars in sight, which he described as a very moving experience. He then watched as another craft drew near, disappeared and went through the wall of the mothership as his had. He soon realized that the other two sides of the pyramid had hidden doors, so after he finished stargazing, he decided to explore the rest of the ship, if possible. He placed both hands on one wall and stepped into an airlock with another door ahead. What he found on the other side amazed him completely. I was in a tropical jungle of a greenhouse, he wrote, adding that it was dome-shaped with a 60-foot diameter rock garden. It had a 20-foot rock wall reaching all around to the rim of the dome with a plethora of exotic plants and pathways of red sand and green turf, as some benches and abstract sculptures. There was much more to this large space, far too much to relate here. Obviously, this place was the recreation dome for the UFO Nauts of their passenger guests, Magok Sissa surmised. As he wandered up a path, Magoksa wondered why he had not, as yet, seen either other passengers or the alien hosts. After a great sleep on an airbed in his room, he awoke, took a waterless shower and at breakfast, an assortment of cud cubes. When he peered out the window, he realized that the space outside was now full of star clusters, whereas before there were none. During this trip he had felt no movement or sudden accelerations and he heard no sound. Inside his room the air temperature, gravity, etc. were perfect for him. And all this comfort while madly hurtling through vast segments of space. He noted, adding that the ship must be traveling several thousand times faster than light. Magoksa returned to the greenhouse, went for a brisk walk, exercised and then returned to his room for lunch and a nap. By evening, he looked outside and realized that the ship was headed for a dazzling spiral nebula. Space became filled with great stellar dust clouds or cosmic gases, glinting and sparkling all around now. He felt faint tremors through the floor and saw sinisterly glinting purple dust clouds as well as great light flashes of blinding magnitude. 4. This glass and steel cupola on the roof of the Reichstag in Berlin, Germany is likely similar to the glass domed in areas on Argonne but much smaller. After harrowing ride Magoksa arrives at Alien World, as the outside elements intensified around the mothership, Oscar Magoksa's room became quite hot and he was afraid that the ship might have encountered an enemy of some kind, that perhaps a battle was taking place. I was honestly scared, he wrote but added, suddenly, it was all over, much to his relief. In the morning, he looked outside again and spotted a gigantic, semi-transparent spaceship, which he described as cigar-shaped and about 1 mile long. He also saw a smaller disc-shaped craft heading toward it, as well as a planet. Then the door to his room opened, indicating to Magoksa that it was time to leave. Beyond the airlock, a single door led out to the disc he had arrived on. After I boarded and the saucer shut its door, we went half-transit, then left the carrier through its wall. Rather than flying to the cigar-shaped craft, the disc descended toward the planet below. On the way, he saw two suns but continued to descend to the planet's dark side. When he saw colored light points coming into view he noted, I was excited like a kid waiting for Santa Claus. As the craft moved even closer, Magoksa spotted dozens of tightly but randomly spaced, gigantic glass domes of varying shapes and sizes, fully packed with forests of towering spires and multi-level roadways. The domes were all interconnected with a maze of curving glass tubes. He described it all as a most fabulously futuristic sight, also very dizzying. Magok said he might finally meet his alien hosts here and that he did. He walked out of the saucer into a big hall. Since he saw no one, alien or otherwise, he stepped onto a moving sidewalk that took him to an elevator with no buttons inside. He went in. The elevator rose and then stopped. He then found himself in a perfectly Earth-like piano bar where a red-haired female was singing, I Left My Heart in San Francisco. Then he noticed a handful of normally dressed people scattered around tables. Hit, what was going on? He wondered. Then he heard a voice say, good evening and welcome. He spun around to see the vaguely familiar face of a man with penetrating green eyes. He quickly realized it was the same person, a cabbie, who had driven him to a psychic fair in Toronto some time before his adventure began. Welcome to Planet Argonne of the Ormont system, a member of the Psychine Federation Worlds, the man said. In case you wondered, Ormont on air the names of the twin sons. Now, what would you like to drink? Well, Magoksa was still stunned by all of that but accepted a gin and tonic. The man went on to say that his name was Argus, an alien psychine who would be his host during his stay. Boy, oh boy! Magoksa exclaimed. I had rather expected google-eyed little green dragons with laser guns. Oh, we got those kinds too, on some real far away other star systems, Argus replied. At that psychic fair, he had also met a blonde fellow named Quentin. He realized that he had not gone to that fair by choice, rather he was led to it. You seemed interested, so we dropped a few leads to follow up, Argus said. Since you followed up to the hilt, we decided to give you rides. The key is your own incentive. It was all done for both their benefits, he added. He asked Argus about the unmanned saucers and if they were operated some disembodied, but live intelligence. Argus replied that was true but it was not his intelligence at play. Rather he was human even though alien to Earth but with bionic modifications. He also noted that such long and frequent trips to Earth were too hard on Psychons. They would suffer bad side effects caused by painful vibration lowering to enter Earth's dimension. Argus noted that the Psychons love to study Earth humans due to their surprising inconsistencies in thoughts and behaviors. He explained that he had studied human affairs and as resident Psychian coordinator he was to host those willing to learn about them. That included aliens from other planets, including some in Earth's dimension who came there to work and learn. I was astounded, Magoxi wrote. You mean all these people are aliens? Argus replied yes and let him know that he'd soon get to meet some of them. He let Magoxi speak with the pianist who was actually a scientist and had studied Earth ways on a planet called Nova Terra. Then Argus cut in. He told Magoxi that he should explore Argona, which he called an experimental center for applied psychic arts and sciences. He also explained that the domed areas were vital to survival since the two suns caused extreme heat, humidity and storms. Magoxi was then showed his room, a Florida-style hotel that included a garden patio and a swimming pool set in a lush tropical garden. He immediately saw several men and women enjoying the sunshine effect poolside, all visitors to Argona. After dinner and a party that night, he was ready to explore the planet. He and Argus traveled by mini car, a hovercraft, above paved highways with directional lights. He learned that many of the domes were research laboratories and plants while others were recreation areas and residences. They finally stopped at a large dome, the recreational area, entering via an underground tunnel. They took moving belt walkways and saw both humanoid aliens and two absolutely unearthly. They came in almost all colors of the rainbow, ranging in height from about 4 feet up to 7. Another dome they visited was comprised of a number of rooms, one of which had hundreds of tent-sized crystal pyramids laid out in concentric circles. Argus explained that it was used for power group meditation. In yet one looked like a planetarium but was used for personal development. A person, Argus explained, could check his or her position on a life probability path and learn what their most favorable short and long-term decisions and moves should be. The ultimate purpose, he said, was to achieve the highest possible state of knowledge and heightened awareness. The following day, a trip by hover car to the countryside included a domed area where people were practicing self-induced levitation. In another dome that generated and converted psychic-type energies, huge stone slabs were levitated into place. In yet another, people experimented with vibratory resonance for pure harmony theoretics of music, poetry, psychic states, mathematics, technologies, and who can tell what. Magoxi learned that on Argona, everything was automated so residents and visitors could enjoy the maximum possible experience, enjoyment and growth. He could not help pondering the situation on Earth where there was poverty, ignorance and greed that kept the planet running in a negative vicious cycle. The following day, Argus invited him to his study where he had a large screen to illustrate what he wished him to know. He talked about the dome with the astronomical features and explained that the relative position of planetary bodies within a given solar system had a significant bearing on world events in respective sectors, not unlike what astrologists attempt to determine today. Ahit, he also told Magoxi that although Earth has polluted air and water, it is also densely covered in psychic pollution that was directly affecting people's lives, as well as motivation on a global scale. On the screen, he could see heavy clouds of psychic pollution over areas like the Middle East, South Africa, many spots over India, the Far East, several spots over parts of Europe and the Americas, places where there was hate, fear, violence, social unrest or even envy, greed, cutthroat competition, discrimination, hypocrisy and crass materialism. When they broke for coffee, Mogoksi spoke about the way of humans to create such misery and suffering throughout the ages. Argus explained that once humans advanced to the point where they did not have to worry about survival of the fittest, teamwork and cooperation alone ensured the further progress of civilizations. It was certainly a great lesson that our world leaders should put into action. Of course there was much more Mogoksi learned that day, but suffice to say that the Psychonauts've been attempting to help Earth conditions to improve for a long time. Argus noted that Earth will soon be entering a much higher vibration level, but since it is still functioning at such a low level, the incoming vibrations of the oncoming cycle will clash with the psychic pollution suffused Earth, causing a violent shake-up that would include political turmoil and devastating wars, even natural cataclysms. We are also standing by with a vast fleet of giant spaceships to offer rescuing to as many people as we can, in case the feared large-scale devastations leave no other choice, he said, adding that whatever happens on Earth could affect even far away life. We still want your people to learn the truth of our presence eventually. Besides drawing attention to the fact that Earth humans are not alone in the cosmos and are certainly not the most highly evolved. But for reasons already stated, it's better to infiltrate the truth slowly at first, stepping it up gradually. Argus said they knew there were lots of UFO sightings and sporadic contacts. There are many different kinds of UFOs coming in varying modes and shapes, he said. This is due to the fact that besides the Psychene Federation worlds, there are many other stellar systems in this galactic alliance of ours with widely varying cultures. No matter where some Earth people might be taken and what they would learn, Argus said the main message is, Earthman, change or perish. This is the message that Mogoksi and others are trying to share with the world. It is also the reason the Psychonauts gave this writer the go-ahead to write about all of this. With that message made clear, Argus told Mogoksi that he was to meet Commander Spectron before he left the planet. Bon voyage and peace be with you, brother, he said. 5. Magoximtsquat Selkot. Oscar Mogoksi was led into another suite where a tall blonde-haired man was there to greet him. He was shocked when he realized it was Quentin, the man he had met at the psychic fair at the Sheraton Hotel in Toronto. Quentin explained that he was not a psychine but rather a Spectron advisor from another dimension, and his job was to arrange for suitable visitors to make the trip to Argana so they could learn about the Psychonauts amongst other things. He further explained that Argus' role as staff officer of the Psychene Space Fleet Intelligence was mainly coordinating and hosting after giving security clearance to the proposed visitors. Mogoksi did not know it at the time, but he was actually staring into the face of the famous Mexican deity Quetzalcoatl, also known as the Feathered Serpent. Quetzalcoatl was the patron god of the Aztec priesthood, of learning and knowledge, like the present-day goal of Quentin. According to legend, the gods and humans lived in harmony. However, the god Quetzalcoatl saw that humans are being subjugated under certain other gods and was not happy about that. He decided to adopt the human condition to share the knowledge and art that the deities possessed. This serpent-like deity was worshipped by ancient Mesoamerican cultures as seen in various temples and the Ciudad La complex in Teotihuacan. In the Valley of Mexico there is a Tlaquihuitepec Great Pyramid of Cholula, an artificial mountain 180 feet high and 1,300 by 1,300 feet at its base. From about 900 AD, the pyramid, which is the largest in the world, was a temple dedicated to Quetzalcoatl by the indigenous inhabitants, the Naha. Mayan gods that were also feathered serpents include Kukulkan and Kmatz. The belief in Quetzalcoatl seems to be related to a belief in a sky, Venus, creator, war and fertility-related serpent deity, but according to historian David Carrasco, this flying reptile was the patron deity of the urban center, a god of culture and civilization. There are various myths surrounding this god, but it seems evident that he was widely known as the inventor of books and the calendar and the giver of maize, corn, to mankind. Some legends indicate that he was opposed to human sacrifice, while others describe him practicing it. Various theories about this god are now expounded by a New Age student to Tony Shearer's book Lord of the Dawn, Quetzalcoatl and the Tree of Life, 1971, and republished as Lord of the Dawn, Quetzalcoatl, the Plumed Serpent of Mexico. In an article entitled Was Quetzalcoatl an Extraterrestrial from the Pleiades? It notes that the Maya were visited by a robed Caucasian man with blonde hair, blue eyes and a beard by the name of Quetzalcoatl, who taught the Maya about agriculture, medicine, mathematics and astronomy. Although this sounds like Quentin, the difference in this write-up is that the author suggests that this ET came from the Pleiades. He also infers that the Maya were warned about a bearded white man who would arrive and conquer them. The Book of Chilamblam also includes that prophecy. The writer states and adds that Quetzalcoatl would return one day. The conqueror is believed to be Hernan Cortes, a Spanish conquistador who invaded Mexico in the 16th century. The writer also notes that North and South American Indians, and South Pacific legends also speak of a white-skinned, bearded lord named Quetzalcoatl who arrived about 2,000 years ago. According to Ancient American Foundation, this could be true. In the Book of Mormon it states, and it came to pass, as they understood they cast their eyes up again towards heaven, and behold, they saw a man descending out of heaven, and he was clothed in a white robe, and he came down and stood in the midst of them. 3 Nephi 11-8. The following quotations are indicative of what is said about Quetzalcoatl. In all of America's past no figure is more exciting, more tantalizing, or more frustrating than that of the fair god Quetzalcoatl. Erwin 1963:33. Quetzalcoatl was a man of comely appearance and serious disposition. His countenance was white, and he wore a beard. His manner of dress consisted of a long, flowing robe. Ixtlilxochitl, 45. As far as Quetzalcoatl being in the South Pacific, that might be true as well. In a book entitled A South Pacific Odyssey, an account of a 1957 trip to the South Pacific, author Herbert G. Metcalf wrote about a temple of Quetzalcoatl that was found to have carvings of serpent heads with plumed collars around the neck. Incidentally, he wrote, Quetzalcoatl was supposed to have been a golden-haired, white-skinned leader who came from the north and was worshipped as a god. It seems, therefore, that Quetzalcoatl, now Quentin, got around quite a bit on Earth in the past. 6. Perilous trip through the Great Chaos Barrier and Plain of Shadows. Quentin told Dusko Magoxidat he could now go back to Earth and resume his life, but he felt the Council of Guardians would want to meet him. He explained that they are the elder brothers of humankind in the realm of all these dimensions, including that of Earth. Magok said he would love to go. Glad to hear that, Quentin said, but added that the trip could be dangerous both physically and mentally. He told him he would undergo some personality changes, for the better of course, and added, you'll never be the same. He also explained that the guardians, who exist in soul essence, are immortal beings who reside in a non-physical place. These benevolent beings exist along with the ascended masters. Quentin noted that their Earth mission must continue because there are other ruthless aliens who wish to make contact, and some of them have deadly powers. He said that while the Guardians work with the forces of light, there are other hostile entities that comprise the dark forces. The Guardians have chosen to guard us against destruction by the dark forces, to guide us on our evolutionary growths, to alleviate unnecessary suffering due to ignorance in the backward areas. He explained that the core of the galaxy in which Argonus exists is called the Great Chaos Barrier, which is a spiraling space full of monstrous electric storms that have crippled many a spaceship that attempted to go through it. It was actually the far away nebula that Magoxi had seen before he arrived. However, he added that there are window areas that ships can travel. An arm of the barrier had caused the electrical storm the mothership encountered on its way to Argonus. He added that there are a number of windows in space, including one that opens into Earth's solar system. Quentin said the spacecraft he came in would take him to the outer reaches of the Great Chaos Barrier, where he would transfer to a phantom ship that would take him to the Eye of the Zone. Magog Cybgan the Voyager and the Saucer, and then had to put on a special outfit complete with goggles.